Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. The great Kate Mulgrew is here. You may know her from Ryan's Hope, from Mrs. Columbo, from Star Trek, from Orange is the New Black. And Kate, I have to say the most ironic thing I've ever seen is you fiddling with your phone. Need I remind you, you ran a starship for a couple of years.
Yes. Well, you can only imagine. Right? I missed the gas station,
yes,
didn't I?
Yes.
I did.
It's so good to finally meet you. Wendy
Thank
and I
you.
Are huge fans.
Are you?
Yes.
Oh, going back to Ryan's Hope.
That's a long, long way. Come on, Wendy. How old were you at that time?
I was probably in my teens.
Grade
you were two.
Or high school?
Oh, no. But I liked that almost more than all my children.
Well, and I should hope so.
It was really good.
It was
good.
The best written soap opera of its time and ever, if you want my perspective. Written by the incomparable and unparalleled Claire Levine, who became my great friend. She died a couple of years ago. But out of that wickedly smart and original imagination sprang this creation, Mary Ryan.
The she love affair awesome. You had for Jack Finelli, a writer whose job it was to take down your brother, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
to some extent. Yeah. Finelli was always twirling his
invisible
mustache. Right.
Played by Daniel
Hugh
Kelly.
That's right.
Michael Levin, of course, was
But
Jack.
After sort of I left, it was somebody else. I was only there for about a year and a half.
Not long enough.
Years. No, not long. And there was a hue and a cry when I left. Claire really wanted to kill me.
Yeah.
Because she was so beloved.
Yeah.
And ABC demanded that she stay on, and then it just became a sort of sad slope after that. But it was a great, great thing. I made wonderful friends there, and how you know you got lucky. Claire Levine, Nancy Addison, great friends.
Oh, good.
Now, you were at North Central College in Naperville. Was it last night?
Last night.
How'd it go for you?
It went well. You know, the audience was terrific. The night before, I'd launched in New York, and I'd read the same excerpts that I read last night. In New York, they were raucous, laughing hysterically. Here in the Midwest, it was so respectful.
Really?
Laughing only when they knew it was supposed to be funny. Because, of course, I'm talking about the loss of my parents. And I thought, that's what I love about the Midwestern mentality. Till the end, respectful, deeply respectful. You could have heard a pin drop in that room, and then they all bought a book, and I signed it. So that was the purpose, and it was met, and I was deeply gratified.
The book is called How to Forget, and it deals with the horrible situation that you went through and many of us go through where your parents are in failing health. You had it happen almost simultaneously where
yes,
both of them got sick.
I don't know that I would say horrible.
No?
I think in my father's case, quite good. It was so fast, three weeks. The man had never seen a doctor in his life. I'm not exaggerating.
No.
And at 83, he broke his glasses somehow, and he couldn't do his crossword puzzles, for which he lived. No. And my brother Joe called and said, I was on tour doing a one-woman show in Palm Beach, and he called me up and he said, something's up with Dad, and I think it's not good. And that's when I said to my producers, I'm not going to regret this. Don't make me regret this. Because I'd missed things in my life because of my career. I didn't this time. And I went home, took my father to the doctors with my brother Joe, and insisted that the doctor tell my father exactly what was going on. And when he was finished, my father looked at the doctor and he said, not a lot of laughs in your line of work, are there, pal? I think you're probably a very fine doctor, but we will not be meeting again.
Oh, my God.
Took him home, said, how about a drink, Dad? He said, now you're talking my lingo. And we stayed up for 6 hours. Consumed an entire bottle of Popov vodka in front of a roaring fire. And that is part one of How to Forget. But he died 2 weeks later.
But you had that time. What a special time with him.
Exactly right. That's the point. And that was the sort of mystical, I don't know, gift that was given to me at the very end. Mother, I mean, that was 9 years of a darkening, an ever-darkening thicket. You just watch them disappear in the forest. And at some point, they let go of your hand. And then at some point, you can barely discern them. And then at another point, it's a mere shadow. And then they're gone. And long before that, they are entirely gone to themselves.
Yeah.
To such an extent that she said to me after diagnosis, a couple of months after diagnosis, she asked me to go upstairs with her to her bedroom. Close and lock the door, Kitty. I need to talk to you. What, Mommy? She said, now you know and I know that this, tapping her brain, is all I have or have ever had. And I cannot go out like this. So I'm going to ask you to help me. I think you know what I mean and I think you know how to do it. You just go get that part and I'll do the rest. So when I sought out a doctor and brought this question to her, my friend said, yes, it's possible, of course. Difficult. There could be regurgitation. There could be any kind of thing. But she'll have forgotten it by the time you get this cocktail to her. And indeed, she had forgotten it. And it was never mentioned again because already that light had gone off. That her cognition was already in such disrepair. So I think saying goodbye that way is harrowing, and to use your word, horrible.
Yeah.
Really kind of unspeakably horrible. Because not only does she not know herself, but you don't get the chance to say goodbye to the woman who defined you, shaped you, and taught you how to love.
Why did she ask you?
I was her her girl.
Yeah.
Now, she loved all of us, of course. She had 8 children, and as she was fond of saying to anybody who would listen, and at least 18 miscarriages.
Oh. Wow.
She asked me because at the age of 14, my mother died. My mother's mother died in childbirth. And when I was 14, we sat at the coffee table in the kitchen. And my mother looked at me, and she had that strange hint of a haunting smile on her lips. And she said, you know, kitten, I didn't have a mother. So there's this absolutely unbridgeable gap, this unfillable chasm that I've lived with all my life. I can't seem to find a way around it. But when I look at you, I see that you have all of the good attributes of a good mother. You're sound and fine and strong and reliable and funny. Why don't we make a pact? And you can be my mother from now on, and nobody needs to know. And I said, that's a deal, Mom.
A lot of pressure on you, though.
And in fact, it was a deal. And we laughed and we drank our coffee, but the pledge had been made. And the commitment had been signed. And that was it. So how was I with my mother? I would think I was my mother's mother. Couldn't wait then to beat it the hell out of there, become successful as fast as possible, if for no other reason than to get her on a plane to come to me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and visit me all over the world, which she spent the rest of her life doing.
Yeah.
You know, I'd send that ticket and my father got him for weeks at a time. It was great.
What did they make of your success, Kate?
My mother
was
a strong, of course, a shining advocate. Although she, too, was funny. They were both terrible, terrible, incorrigible snobs. You know, these guys. She'd say to me, why are you doing TV, sweetheart? And I really don't think you should be doing soap operas. Why don't you do movies? Then we can go together. And my father never saw me perform in anything. He came once in 35 years, 40 years, to see me as Tamara in Titus Andronicus in Shakespeare in the Park in New York. And how did I know? Because I was in my dressing room in the dugout. It's an outside theater. And I heard at intermission, when the hell is halftime? I said to him later that night, you need never attend the theater again, Dad.
Did it bother you much as your star was shining brighter and brighter that your dad was staying away? Did that get to you a little bit?
Well, this is the question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Freud would have a field day.
Yeah.
I think it probably surely does.
Yeah.
I think that on many levels it had less to do with my acting than it did with how he felt about my mother loving my acting.
Yeah.
He wanted my mother. That's what this book centers around.
Didn't want to share her.
And he went after her. He found her here in the great city of Chicago. Found her at St. Pat's Church.
Really?
The beautiful old St. Pat's, where he stared at the back of her head for a number of weeks before he had the guts to approach her outside on the steps. And he said, I like the cut of your jib. And she said, surely you're joking. I don't date short men. Well, suffice it to say, after Kennedy's campaign, they all went back east. Kennedy got engaged to Jackie Bouvier, which we all know.
Yeah.
Jean Kennedy, her great friend with whom she was sharing an apartment down here, got married to Steve Smith. Effie Harris, her other friend, got married and moved to Mexico. My mother's alone in a little garret apartment in Boston, staring out at the commons, wondering what's happened to her life. 6 months after she'd met my father, she picked up the phone and called him and said, if you're still interested, I'll marry you. And he was on the next plane. Look at that.
So that's a good opening line. I like the cut of your jib. That will work.
Yeah.
Well, it did back then.
It did back then.
Yeah, that it did. Now it would be sort of, how do you spell that? Can you tweet that? Am I going to get in trouble?
Kate Mulgrew is here. Her book is called How to Forget, A Daughter's Memoir. We'll pick this conversation up in just a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Kate Mulgrew. You know her as an accomplished actor. She has written another book, a great book, How to Forget, A Daughter's Memoir, about her parents and what she went through as their health deteriorated. A lot of love for you, by the way, on the text line, Kate. Many, many people saying they can't wait to read the book. And I just want to add, your voice is second to none. You've just got the most wonderful voice.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you.
We were talking off the air. You made this pact with your mother, and you guys had a great relationship. But did you know everything? Were there some secrets that you didn't know? Did you have a really close relationship?
Well, very. But after the contract was made that I would be her mother in whatever incarnation she suspected that would take place in, certain secrets were not only revealed but shared. And I was privy to things that I probably should not. I know that I should not have been privy to. And I kept them locked in the vault for many, many years until I could no longer contain them. And the depth of the profundity of them and the sort of seriousness of them and the dangerousness of them was significant enough for me to say to you now, Wendy, I'm looking at you and saying, I won't keep a secret now, so don't ask me to. You know?
Yeah.
They were too much. And then you just kind of get really, really nervous about the bearing of those secrets. She had a lot of inner feelings, my mother. She had a lot of profound frustration. And when the second sister to die, Tessie...
You lost two sisters?
Two, but Tessie took 2 years. She was diagnosed at 12 of a brain tumor, astrocytoma, inoperable. That's the thing that fractured the family and the marriage, and certainly my mother.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put it all together, she was born without a mother. Well, her mother died in childbirth, right? And then she was sent off to school. Which in the book, I say, taught her how to forget, because that's where she met Gene Kennedy and her life was saved. But still, without a mother, she struggled through life. Then she marries Tom Mulgrew, whom she meets in Chicago, and they move to Dubuque, Iowa. And she proceeds to have 8 children, sequentially. She buries Maggie, who is 3 months old. And then 10 or 11 years later, she buries Tessie of a brain tumor. In between, she has a number of miscarriages and pregnancies, and she has migraines for years, which I bear witness to. So all of this is blunting her brain, which was, believe me, an exceptional organ. Mm-hmm. My mother was a terrific human being,
mm-hmm.
a great thinker, a voracious reader, striving always, you know, in the quest for God. She used to sit in the pew at church, Catholic Mass, right? Mm-hmm. With the priest just carrying on, with children spread out, helter-skelter in the pew, and she'd be reading Spinoza. The other, you know, you could see the women looking at my mother, just sort of scowling at her. Who is she? And she doesn't deserve that good-looking teaching. But I think blow after blow after blow dealt to her brain sort of resulted in, this is an amateur diagnosis, in what we call now Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah. You have children of your own. What did your mother teach you to do or to not do as a mother?
She taught me not to play favorites.
Yeah.
She played favorites with me. And you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
She used to look at us all. I mean, everybody was just desperate for her attention. And she'd say, I love you all, but I like some of you better than others.
Oh, wow.
And you know who you are.
Wow.
It's absolutely crazy. You're saying wow, but we were meant to laugh about that.
Yeah.
I don't know how funny that is. Well, not, certainly not when you're 8 and you'd do anything for a crumb of your mother's attention. She was an eccentric woman. She was unexpected. And she certainly did not think she was going to have 8 children.
No.
It was too much.
Yeah.
This petite, gamin little woman.
Yeah.
She was meant to be an artist, a free thinker. She was a bohemian thinker. And my father got her. He couldn't believe that he'd won this prize. He wanted her. Mm-hmm. He was passionately in love. I have his love letters. That's what this book came out of as I sat in the wintertime in Ireland, tears streaming down my cheeks reading these letters. How deeply he loved her, how much he wanted her. So I don't know that it was reciprocated.
But Kate, what you just said, isn't that what every offspring hopes to hear about their parents, that there was that deep of a love? That's such a compliment.
Well, you want to hear that it's reciprocal.
Yeah.
You want it to be at least balanced. I mean, you don't mind if one is loved a bit more than the other. That's also good. I mean, it can work. It can really work. And it's usually the way of love. I don't know if you guys are in love or have somebody or whatever. But usually, by degree, somebody loves somebody a little bit more. And people love to say, yeah, but it changes. No, it doesn't really change. Somebody loves somebody more is what I really think. And I think he loved her more. And I think as the years passed and Tessie died and Maggie died and she didn't get the things that she needed, she began to disappear from him. And so I think when he died, he was actually probably relieved.
Wow.
Probably.
All right, so you have this pact with your mother to be her mother. You were also the mother to all the women in Orange is the New Black. So you took that role and made it work for you.
Yeah, they say that, don't they?
Yes.
That's fine. I was a mother to a handful of them. I made that clear. I called them my daughters, right, the ones that I loved. But I think Galina Red Reznikov was a very vivid creature. Her intention in jail, I think she took the fall for her family first, let it be said. Once we got involved in the Russian mob and I punched that woman's tit, and I couldn't pay the 50 grand to the Russian mobster, right?
Yep.
Then I had to go to jail because Dmitry, my husband, my ne'er-do-well, a good-for-nothing husband, couldn't do anything. He had to stay behind in Queens and run the deli with my three sons, also a couple, three losers. So I take it, I go to jail, and I say to myself, I'm not only going to survive this, but I'm going to survive it with some excellence.
Yeah.
I'm going to walk out of this prison with my head held high, and I'm going to take that kitchen and I'm going to transform it into something unbelievable. And that's what Red tried to do. In the process, I loved. But if you watched it closely, if you crossed the line with Red, you're out of the picture, baby. Yep.
As it should be.
Yep.
Loyalty means something.
Well, yes, but I killed her.
Yep.
There was a serious parameters drawn by Red.
There were some rumors going around after Carrie Fisher passed away that some fans thought that you would make a good General Leia in the upcoming Star Wars films, but then they decided not to go with that. Were you aware of that? Would you have taken that role?
I was completely unaware.
Really?
Of that. But I'm unaware of all of it. I mean, I love it when I hear these things. No, I was not aware of that.
Would you have taken it?
Probably.
That's
a very different kettle of fish. You're talking about Star Wars versus Star Trek.
Right,
sure.
I am a Star Trek captain.
Yeah.
Can't they intertwine?
They don't. You're going to get feedback.
No,
look at the lights.
I am married to a Star Wars fan, so I know that that's...
Well, then, and so he should be allegiant to his
base. I kind of like them both.
Do you like them both?
Yeah.
You can like them both. You don't think so? You don't think you can?
Well,
no?
I'm a Star Trek captain.
Right. We're asking the wrong person.
Don't push the wrong button. Oh, wait, I just became Red. What's going on here?
Be careful. Okay, what are you proudest of career-wise? What have you done that makes you really
Janeway.
Just beam? Yeah?
There's
Captain
no question.
Janeway.
She was
Captain
awesome.
Janeway.
Not only was it the hardest work, not only did I change or make Hollywood history, television history, the first female captain of a starship, But Patrick Stewart said this to me at the end of the first week. I met him at the craft service table. And I said, it's overwhelming. The technobabble, the 18-hour days, how am I going to get through this? He said, I can assure you, if you simply look at the work, do it. Say to yourself every day, I shall do my very best.
Yeah.
You'll walk away from this prouder than anything else. And indeed, I do.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
That's why captains are so territorial.
Yeah.
That's why we don't like to talk about each other. That's like we don't want to meet each other particularly.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
That was his ship. This is my ship. It's tough. It's a huge accomplishment.
You know they're bringing him back, right? He's doing another version of Picard.
He walked out of the convention last year in Vegas and announced it on stage.
Would you do it if they approached you and said, we want to bring Janeway back? Would you do it again?
I don't know.
Tough call, huh?
I'm not sure about... Didn't we talk about this just before we went on the air?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about revivals.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure about that. Isn't life short enough?
Yeah.
There are so many things to visit. aren't there?
Yes.
And now I'm at an age, as you both can see with your eyes, I'm in my middle age, getting quite up there. I want to explore what it is to do fine character work.
Yeah.
And to that end, I am playing a psychopathic, nymphomaniacal pedophile right now on Mr. Mercedes.
Excellent.
Right on.
Absolutely unrecognizable, and nobody's allowed to watch it.
An honor to meet you. As we said when you first walked into the room, Wendy and I have loved your work forever,
Thank you.
You certainly don't disappoint.
You guys are great. Great
Thank
fun.
You, Kate.
The book is available wherever you get your local books. Amazon, I'm assured. Your website, katemulgrew.com. Kate Mulgrew, How to Forget, A Daughter's Memoir. Fantastic work.
Thank you for having me, you guys.
Absolutely.
Take care.
Keep it up. A little break, some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.